They don't want to learn about other people other than their own westernized way of living and westernized way of superiority. So as far as stereotypes, yeah, I feel like everywhere I go, from the moment I wake up until I go to bed, whether it's a store, whether it's a restaurant, whether it's anything I do in my day-to-day lives, I think people may not speak in a way where, oh, what are you doing here? But I think there's a lot of that look where people are like, oh, what are you doing here?
Salam Hepte tells us about what it's like to be an immigrant from another country and have to adjust to life in the United States. All on All the Way Authentic. I'm your host, Kevin B. Henry.
I've never really done any reflection since I came here in the 90s of my teenage years and 20s, my 30s, and now my 40s. So this has been giving me a thought process like, wow, it is quite a journey. Almost about 30 years since I've came here. So this has been good to just think about, wow. And look, I was a teenager when I came here. Now I have kids who are also teenagers, and their view or the world in their lens is totally different than when I was a teenager as an immigrant here.
Well, that's a good place to start. So why don't you just start with introducing yourself and then where you came from and then why you came and then what age you were at, and then just tell me the story.
Sure. My name is Salamawit Hepte. I go by Salam Hepte. That's actually my Starbucks name.
Your Starbucks name?
Right. It makes me laugh because when we came here, I mean, to pronounce Salamawit is hard, unless, you know, you're from a different country than the Western world. It's not Sally or Karen or Molly and none of those familiar names that you hear here in the U.S. So I noticed when I first moved here, people could not pronounce my name. And I wasn't aware of that. People would have hard time to pronounce my name because all I've known is names that I'm familiar with, names that people can pronounce each other's name, because at my homeland, there is no problem pronouncing each other.
And each where other. Are you from?
I'm Ethiopian. I'm from Ethiopia, a country in the East Africa, and a really beautiful place, which I'm proud of. And I came here when I was 15 as a junior in high school. So that's been quite a journey. Now in my 40s, I have my own children now. It's been interesting, a lot of learning, a lot of finding who I am in this world, and learning more about me along the way.
Now, let me interrupt you for a second. So what was the reason why you left Ethiopia to come here, and why Seattle in particular?
Sure. So my parents came here. Of course, always is any time there is an immigration or a migrating to a different world, it's usually for a better life. So for us, it was not to escape a war like a lot of people might have thought. I mean, it was pretty peaceful at that time where I was born and lived, but it was more to have better opportunity for us kids then, three of us siblings. I was the oldest of three. So my parents decided to come here to have a better opportunity for themselves. Mostly though, it was more of for us kids to really live the American dream, to get better education, to have better access to different things as far as health care, education, living a better life, maybe owning a dream car that we didn't grow up having. So that was the main purpose of coming to Seattle. And I believe my parents had friends or family that lived here. So that was a place to really settle for a while. When I heard we're going to Seattle, Washington, when I was a kid back there, when my parents told me that there's a process starting, we're going to go to Seattle, Washington. I thought we're going to Washington, D.C., because I've never heard of Seattle, Washington. And that's how much we knew about any other world other than our own country. So you hear a lot about Washington, D.C., I guess, in different places. So that I thought we were going to go to Washington, D.C. Not that it makes a difference whether Seattle, Washington or Washington, D.C., but I didn't know where we were going to go, you know, about over 8,000 miles from Seattle. So it was a long way from home. So here I am now.
But let's stay in the past. So what was it like? Was it like you got here and everything kind of fell into place? Or what was it like, kind of tense or produced a lot of anxiety? Or just tell me about the transition.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was the first time getting on a plane. You know, we can start there. We didn't have a lot of exposure about what it feels to go on a plane, you know, up high, other than seeing plane flies up in the air. So that experience itself was very frightening. And as kids growing up, we really didn't share our emotions. So you hide your emotions. You just do what you're told. Whatever our parents tell us, we do, whether we like it or not. So there was not a lot of expression of, oh, I'm nervous about this trip. I'm nervous about this change. I don't know what to expect. I mean, you hear about, you know, United States being a great world of lots of opportunities, but would that be the same for me? What to expect? What to look forward to? We didn't have a lot of information. So it was hard, but the transition here, once we got here in the States, it was hard. We've never been in an escalator before. We don't have escalator where I was born. You know, as simple as those things that we take for granted now and here, TV, you know, you have 24-hour TV going on here. Back home, we didn't have TV growing up, but there was TV in the neighborhood. So you kind of know there's television going on, but usually they operate a couple hours a day. So it's not 24/7. So when we were home, I remember in high school, you can just sit there and stare at a TV, and the TV goes on and on and on until you decided to turn off the TV and go away. So that was hard. It's like, oh, it never turns off. Like I'm in charge of this now. I can turn off the TV and walk away and do some other important stuff. So it was really fun even to watch and not knowing what's on the show, right? No idea of the language that's spoken. We spoke a little bit English, but not perfect or fluent. So there was a lot of culture shock to really put that in a sentence.
How were the people? Were the people nice, or did you face any kind of discrimination or challenges or any of that?
My high school transition was really hard. I mean, as you know, kids are mean, you know, they want to find things to bully and make fun of, you know, whether it's our hair or the way we look or the way we spoke. It was a lot of shocking situations at school where I didn't know how to deal with. Yes, there are counselors. Yes, there are support systems that are available, but I didn't even know how to access that. So the couple of years of high school was really, really hard and intense, and finding friends. At that time, there were not a lot of Ethiopians here, so we didn't have a lot of classmates, schoolmates, and not knowing culture, like sports, after school clubs, family support, everything that I knew now, I'm sure I would imagine it was available, but I did not know how to access it. So my high school transition was really, really hard. And then you hear a lot of things from home. Our parents brought us here to achieve American dream, to get better education, to have better jobs in the future, to grow up better than the way they grew up. So a lot of pressure from home, and also not having that support to be that expectation that my parents expected us to be was very stressful.
So what advice would you give to people? Because a lot of people that listen to this podcast or listen to this, even in a training setting, they really want to be allies. They want to be, and they're not always white people necessarily, but they're just people that say, hey, you know, I really want to support someone from another country. I mean, so what are some of the things that you could like advise someone? Like, for instance, if say you live in a neighborhood and an Ethiopian family moves in next door or something, and you say, well, you know, I'd really like to get to know them. Do you have any tips or advice for people?
Yeah, I think so. I think I have a lot of white allies. I have a lot of people that made me feel comfortable and welcome in my 20s, 30s, whether it's neighbors, coworkers, people that I just met. And it's usually being open to learning about the other people who we are not familiar with, their culture, their tradition, and not necessarily boldly asking questions, because that could be offending somehow, even though people genuinely ask questions in wanting to know. But I think coming in with maybe a little bit of information, let's just say an immigrant family moves in, whether it's Hispanic or Ethiopian. Now in this DNA, we can Google information. We can learn at least where that country is. Ethiopia is not in Asia or in South America, you know, knowing that where that is located in a map, you know, some simple things like that. And as a conversation starter. And I think genuinely we're all humans. We have that thing in common. So as long as they're not being judgmental or asking a lot of questions, because we always don't feel like answering that question. And I don't think that's a way really to become an ally or become friendly. But if I think they're open to learning, but coming in with a little bit of information about the immigrant people here, And you know, we can't be stereotyped, because a lot of immigrants come with a lot of knowledge that the Western don't have, whether it's family, culture, tradition. We come in with set of values and important things that we can contribute even in our new world. So maybe finding skills that we can incorporate in, even though we're new for the culture, we're new for the city. So some integration that we can work together with the immigrant community as well as with the natives here.
Well, one thing I was thinking of in several of my jobs that I've had over the years, and usually it's around inclusion and diversity and that kind of thing. We've had potlucks a lot. And the thing that's been nice about potlucks is that, well, everybody needs to eat, right? And yeah. Most people are kind of curious about different types of food. You know, you have the term foodie. You know, you have people that go to a Thai restaurant, or they want to go to a Vietnamese restaurant or what have mm-hmm. you. And so what I found is that inviting people to bring a dish from their country, basically, it's yeah. to eat. And then you can have more of a casual conversation about it, you know, because a lot of times there's history behind it, or there's a recipe or something like that. And it doesn't have to be this really heavy thing like, well, OK, tell me about your culture now, you know, like you're supposed to be a teacher or something. But I did want to ask you about stereotypes. Have you come across any stereotypes since you've been here up until now about people from Africa, for instance? Because I remember I interviewed somebody, a woman, she's like a pretty young woman, but she's from the Middle East. And she said she got mm-hmm. some of the stupidest questions. You know, she moved over here and people said, well, do you have cell phones in Iran? You know, she said, of course we have cell phones, you know. And then it was like they had this, some people imagine that they had camels walking up and down the streets and things like that, because this is what they've seen in the movies, maybe. Yeah. But have you run into some stereotypes like that you just kind of shake your head at?
Yeah, absolutely. I think when it comes to stereotype, since I've been here the past 30 years, not much have changed about what people think we should be or we are as an African people. To me, that's almost 30 years. And really, people still think Africa is like this. I mean, you know, there's a lot of communication between all different parts of the world now. So we've gotten a lot more civilized than we were 30 years ago. But as far as people's view, that haven't changed at all, because I think they don't want to know. You know, people are a little bit ignorant. They don't want to learn about other people other than their own westernized way of living and westernized way of superiority. So as far as stereotypes, yeah, I feel like everywhere I go, from the moment I wake up until I go to bed, whether it's a store, whether it's a restaurant, whether it's anything I do in my day-to-day lives, I think people may not speak in a way where, oh, what are you doing here? But I think there's a lot of that look where people are like, oh, what are you doing here? Like, oh, you look different. And to me, now that I've lived here for 30 years, I don't mind putting a little bit of African in my outfit or my hair or whatever identifies me. So you see people looking at you like, whoa, that's not almost appropriate look, or oh, that's unusual kind of look. So I feel that way everywhere I go on a day-to-day basis, as if I am in that space looking different, acting different, where we're more loud, and we have a lot of kind of almost fun way of talking, whether we're speaking English or our own native language. So you present as being loud and obnoxious and too much joyful, the matter of fact. So I feel that way every day, and it's not something that I can get used to, and it's really, which is really sad. And I fear almost for my own children as well, right? Who are born here, of course, but there's tradition and culture that we pass on to them. And I know they deal with being uncomfortable stereotypes everywhere they go, whether it's their names, whether it's the way they look, whether it's the way they walk. I have two boys with big afro, whether they show up in a community where there are less people that looks like them. So that stereotype is still here 30, 40 years since I've been here. And it's very alarming.
Well, I really appreciate you going into detail about that, because that was probably my last question that I really had for you, was that the effects that it has, and how do you retain your culture, and how do you display it and enjoy it, but still not in a way that brings you some type of pushback or some type of rejection or whatever? Because I think it's very, a person's culture is so much a part of who they are, you know, just like certain people, their religion is very much who they are and their identity. And it's one of the things that will set me off really quick is when people say, oh, I'm just colorblind. Why can't everybody just be colorblind? You know, and I'm like, because, well, for one thing, because people are mistreated in various ways because of their color. So it's easy for somebody who's not being mistreated because of their color to say, oh, I want to be colorblind. Well, okay, because you're 90% of your world, basically. Everybody looks like you, right? But yeah. your color, your accent, your clothes, all of that have history behind it, and it's part of our identities. So I say, hey, you know, tell your boys to hold their heads up high and proud and grow their afro as large as they want. But does it wear on you a little bit? Do you get kind of frustrated sometimes with it, or do you just kind of deal with it?
Well, so my own goal is I don't want my kids to go through the culture shock that I've had. I want them to have just a great experience learning, growing, enjoying being a kid wherever they go. At the same time, embracing their identity. So I am intentional about foods we eat at home and explaining that what those foods are. It comes from generation and generations and history of homemade recipes. And I make sure that they understand that. Not that we don't eat fries and burger, but we do eat a lot more Ethiopian food. And I make sure that they love to eat Ethiopian food, be Ethiopian, learn about the culture. And especially when you think of Ethiopia, it's never been colonized. So something to be proud of. So I teach them history at home all the time. And throughout the year, we're intentional about attending cultural events, not just Ethiopian cultural events, but now they're also Black, right? Because growing up, we thought we were brown, a little bit lighter than Black skin. And I don't know why, but that was just us. But now I want my kids to know that they're Black, they're proud, and they're loud, and they bring whoever there are or whatever the identity they have in place and spaces and show that. So just being intentional every day about whether it's hair and embracing them, letting them know that they're amazing, they're great, they're excellent, because that's not what they see at school. That's not what they learn at school. So if they spend 8 hours a day at school and all they there's no representation at schools, we already know that, and they're not the majority group, there are minority groups in school, and they already feel like less than. So when they're home, I have to redo all of that, and it has to be intentional and by all means. So I'm very intentional about those. And my daughter actually just graduated last year from high school, and she speaks fluent Amharic, which I am so proud of. And you almost see that implementation that you've done when they're younger showing up as they get older and more adulthood. So I think I moved away from the question, but
No, you didn't. I mean, you were telling me that, I mean, basically the question was, does it kind of wear on you psychologically? Because I mean, like I have some friends and coworkers, for instance, who are Native American, indigenous, and I talked to them about mascots, for instance. And I said, well, how does that make you feel? You know, when you get no representation and you get more representation in a degrading kind of way on Sundays when you have these football fans dressed up like white people dressed up like Native Americans and hooping and hollering and jumping up and down, and you've got sports teams named after you, but yet that's it. And
yes.
And I've talked to different people, and it's like they, on one level, they deal with it and they never accept it, but it's like rain in Seattle. You know, you have to deal with it. I don't like it particularly, but well, I deal with it, right? So yeah. That you answered my question. I mean, I think you answered my question really by saying that you're very intentional. Your way of responding to that is to make sure your culture is nurtured in your home, for instance. And yes. I mean, I have the outlet that I get to kind of go on and on about diversity because I get so frustrated sometimes, but then I get to go tell people about it and they actually listen, and then most of them agree with it. So that's my outlet. So I can see some people that come back from a training and go, wow, you know, I never thought of it that way, or I never knew that microaggressions were so prevalent and could really be hurtful to people. So that encourages me.
Yes. Yeah. And you know, for me now, I not only focus with my children or not just my home, I also focus in my community. We're raising next generation here, right? We want them to be the best that they can be and the best that they are. And we want to encourage that from childhood. And I don't just focus with my own children, but community, as far as empowering other immigrant parents. How do you do this at home? Like, the kids are at school most of the time. What can we do at home? How can we understand this world in their lens for them to be proud of their identity? Because I can be saying we're Ethiopian all day, but if the kid doesn't see that, and if they don't feel like that's who they are, identifying themselves as Ethiopian, then it doesn't do any good. So how do we make it where they are proud of who they are? Because they really should be, right? But we as an immigrant family have a little bit of knowledge of our homeland. We've been there, but our kids haven't, or it's just a fairy tale for them. So here as a community, as a parents, as their immigrant parents who are raising first generation here, we have to be intentional. And I make sure that our young people are proud in different forms, whether it's community gathering, whether it's camp. I hosted a summer camp once, whatever it is, to really help our kids feel that they should be proud of their skin, their identity, their background. And once you feel proud of who you are, then I think everything comes in naturally.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything you'd like to add before we close?
Thank you for giving me an opportunity to speak a little bit of my experience. I hope it helps not only our immigrant communities who are going through the same experiences, also other organizations or people or other people that wants to really make the Western world a welcoming country. I hope it helps in some way or another.
I think it did.
Thank you.
You have been listening to an interview with Salam Hepte talking about her experience as an immigrant to the United States, all on All the Way Authentic. I'm your host, Kevin P. Henry.